You want to talk soccer? Talking non-stop soccer talk. This is the show for you. This is TFC Pitchside on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Delgado with a hard pass has found Javinko, and Javinko trying to get clear. Javinko with a shot off the post and in! Here's Bradley. It's into the mixer. Oh, and what a finish by Drew Moore, and it's 2-1.
Well, Tommy Thompson came paddling in.
Johnson for Altidore. Good work by the strong Altidore! The value of a bull like Jozy Altidore.
That's a sensational goal.
He said, bring on the brand new renaissance, 'cause I think I'm ready. When I'm shaking all night long, but my hands are steady.
Come on, man.
It's a sea of red. This is TFC Pitchside with Dan Riccio and Thomas Michalakos.
Happy Monday, and it is TFC with their fifth win in six. They set a new franchise record with 14 points from six games. That's never happened before in this franchise's storied history, Thomas.
Striving to be better and better and better and better as the weeks go by.
I guess so.
What is that overrated?
I don't know. I think some listeners may perceive that to be producer Emil Delich saying the Tragically Hip are overrated.
No.
Just because it meshed with the song. But no, that's not the case.
Glad you're pointing this out, just in case there was any confusion.
That was... stupid Philadelphia Union fans calling Sebastian Giovinco overrated. And
I get it. You want to get under the player's skin.
Okay. Bradley. Sorry, my bad.
Oh, it was Michael Bradley.
Yeah.
I was going
to
say.
And then he delivered a perfect assist to Drew Moore.
You're mad calling the best player in the league overrated. That's what I thought. But Philadelphia fans aren't as stupid as I once thought. Let's just say that.
So you're saying Michael Bradley's overrated?
No, he's not. Okay. I'm just saying it's not Giovinco. Giovinco's completely different story.
But it's not in any form a mention at the Tragically Hip being overrated. That would be wildly stupid by us and really anyone, because they aren't. But here's the reality of the situation. The Tragically Hip had a very emotional night on Saturday in Kingston. Their final show, we think. And Gord Downie was fantastic. I had two screens going on, watching TFC and Gord Downie with the Tragically Hip do their last show.
I thought you were a professional, Dan.
But the reality of the situation is basically one-third of Canada watched that. So if you missed the TFC game or you just caught the highlights, you're listening to us to get a better barometer of what actually happened as they thrashed the Philadelphia Union on Saturday night.
Because you were watching the Hip instead of the TFC game.
Exactly. And no one's going to yell at you for doing that.
Of course not.
Because, yeah, that was just an incredible night.
I was watching the TFC game, though.
For Canada in general. We will have General Manager Tim Bezbachenko on the show. We will have MLS analyst Matthew Doyle on the show, who maybe had a few words about Drew Moore a little too soon, possibly. We'll get to that and more. Still to come, Dan Riccio, Thomas Michalakos, TFC Pitchside, after a 3-1 win over the Philadelphia Union, a game I did not peg them to win. It was one of those, let's get a draw and move through to Orlando, see what you can do there. Road games are road games in MLS, but that didn't happen. And really, I don't think it was a perfect game from TFC. The scoreline maybe flatters them a little bit, especially with the way the second half played out. But that first half, offensively, TFC looked unplayable at times.
Yeah, going forward, there's not one team out there right now that's scarier than TFC for me.
Going forward?
Going forward. Attack. All-out attack.
Okay.
Defensively, though, as much as their defensive record is flattering, we talked about this, it's the way they're conceding goals that's a little bit frightening.
Not
because
conceding chances, though, in this one, too.
True. I have a little bit on the goal.
Yeah.
We'll talk about that after.
You definitely do. But TFC now with 37 goals for, that's not nearly that close to
No.
New York Red Bulls, who have 45, lead the league.
It's not flattering.
New York City FC. But remember, this is a team that didn't score a lot early as they really kind of, as Greg Vanney instilled a defensive mentality. But let's get to the goals. Let's break them down a little bit here on TFC pitch side. And we only have a few minutes before we get to general manager Tim Bezbachenko, who's going to talk to us about Armando Cooper.
Come on, man.
Your narcissism knows no bounds. You made about 10 seconds all about you. I got Emil in the booth going, he did this the entire preview. So he's heard it before, and it was that equally as awful, apparently.
No, that was actually longer than anything.
Was it?
Preview.
Yeah. I'm glad I didn't hear it.
He was in Philadelphia. Good thing that you listened to our match previews. Thanks for that, Thomas.
I talked to you. I don't need to listen to it.
In Philly, Armando was there but did not get into the 18. He is not yet trained with the team until today. So
please do me a favor and don't ever do that again.
First goal of the game comes in the 18th minute, and basically Alex Bono hoofs the ball up, Josie chests it down, Marky Delgado, one touch, nice pass through to Sebastian Giovinco. Phillies D had no chance to set up.
No, not at all.
And obviously Giovinco's first touch makes this all possible. It's incredible. And then the finish is just as good. But all around, what a goal.
Yeah, but what was even better than the finish was his reaction afterwards.
Yeah, well, we've talked about it on the show, right?
It's been an ongoing joke with
Seba
him and Marky Delgado.
Seba has been known to yell at Marky Delgado from time to time.
Yell.
And lately, we've seen more loving moments from Seba to Marky.
He verbally abuses him repeatedly on the pitch. I can only imagine in training.
But, like, after the goal, Seba, his reaction, he points at Marky like angrily. And he says, his eyes at least say this, like, see, this is what I've been trying to tell you all season and last year.
See, for me, it's just all that frustration. The teacher, you know, trying to teach the student and just hitting a wall all the time and then finally breaking through that wall. You're like, I knew you had it in you. It was hilarious.
It was a great moment. And a couple of minutes later, though, TFC give up a goal to Trivett on a set piece. And
this is the scary part for me, though, is the way they concede. They're always,
I don't know. It was a really well-taken set piece.
It was, but, you know, the man marking sometimes, it just seems that they concede goals at times, majority of times, mental lapses, just individual errors, not covering your man. But I'll tell you one thing.
The ball got right in the perfect spot between Drew Moore and Will Johnson.
But they have to be there for that. It could be a perfect ball, but you have to cover it defensively in a perfect kind of way. The thing is with Alex Bono on that goal, though, you know he wants that back. Any keeper.
Powerful header.
Yeah. I'm not saying it's his fault, but the fact that he guessed right, he reacted quickly, and he got a whole palm on the ball. That's one that a keeper thinks about over and over going, how did I not stop that? It's not his fault. It was a great ball.
But he got his whole hand on it.
But he got his whole, when you get a whole.
And he's got to push it.
Yeah.
Not onto the far post.
Yeah. You can call that weak wrist at times, but that was just a perfect header from such close range. I wouldn't call it at that exact moment, but Alex Bono wanted that back.
All right. Well, we'll take it from a former goalkeeper.
Yes, of course, because I know everything apparently.
Former beer league goalkeeper, Thomas Michalakos, doesn't play anymore because of bad knees.
Just making it up on the fly.
Yeah, well, you know, that's what I usually do. Drew Moore scores in about 9 minutes later.
Oh, what a goal.
And there's two things that I really liked about this set piece goal. One is Philly fans yelling overrated at Michael Bradley, who then delivers a perfect ball.
But wasn't even listening to them.
There is Josie Altidore drawing like four Union defenders toward him. And also,
which was an oversight, you would
one
think.
One that I oversaw as well. Another part of this set piece was Jonathan Osorio setting a pick on the aforementioned Trivett.
Little hip.
Allowing Drew Moore that extra little bit of space.
It was definitely.
Maybe we're not giving Drew Moore enough credit.
Yes. I was going to say that finish was a striker's finish. Low to the ground, body pointing at a different angle than towards the net and spinning your head to hit it at that low of an angle. I don't care what kind of hip
check
Osorio did on that one. That was all Drew Moore, and he deserves entirely the credit.
And then in the 44th minute, Jozy Altidore gets a ball in from Will Johnson. Another nice little nifty play from Jonathan Osorio. His diagonal run.
We'll give it to
takes,
him.
We'll give him that one. a Philly defender away from Jozy Altidore, but then he just bullies his way through and gets a little toe poke into the near post.
That play, wasn't that the perfect definition of a power forward in this league? Just the way he posted up.
Jozy was absolutely
bullied them.
Jozy was dominant. Like, absolutely dominant.
More than we've ever seen in a TFC shirt, in my opinion.
He was.
My humble opinion.
Unplayable from a defensive point of view for Philly, I would think.
They had no answers.
They had no answers. They gave no answers. And Jozy, in his hold-up play, in his post-play, as you saw there, he was just too much for them to handle, and he was on their minds. He was in their heads for the entire first half.
Well, nothing proved that more than Drew Moore's goal.
Yeah.
Because you know that play wasn't set up for four defenders to be on Jozy. They just didn't know who was going to deal with them. They wanted to help.
They didn't even pay attention to the ball.
No.
Noticing that it was going over the head of Jozy Altidore.
Or any of the players on the pitch. They didn't know what was going on.
Jozy, after the game, commenting on getting back to form and playing with Sebastian Giovinco.
I think the best moments we had is our first season together when we first started. I thought that's when we were at our best. But we're getting back to it. And Seba, he's going to be great. And it's easy to play with a great player like him. And I think the team looked good tonight. We did a good job of protecting the lead, and you know, something to build on.
Jozy, I know you're staying humble, but you played well last year, and people don't give you enough credit for the 13 goals that you scored, but you look like a man with something to prove right now.
But what is he going to say? Yeah, I'm the greatest. I'm playing the greatest football of my career right
Zlatan
now.
Zlatan would.
Yeah, but there's only one Zlatan.
That's true. That is very, very true. Okay. So, Dan Riccio, Thomas Michalakos, this is TFC Pitch Side. Second half, not as rosy of a story. And I don't want to make this about TFC being bad, because they were, on the whole, quite good in Philadelphia this weekend. But defensively, they gave up a lot of chances. Bono made at least one outstanding save, I think, on Roland Alberg in the second half. And a few times it was a lot about Philly not finishing the chances that were being given to them.
I'm in agreement with you that, to me, their defense does not look as good as the stats show.
Okay.
But it's hard to make an argument when you look at it and you go, oh, they've only allowed 26 goals on the entire
this
year.
This is true.
But I get what you're saying.
My thing is, I'm not sure this team is as stout defensively as they would like to be in the diamond formation. And that's why we saw Greg Vanney in the second half go to the 3-5-2. He brought in Nick Haglund for Will Johnson, took a midfielder out, went to the five defensive line, if you want to even say it that way, with the two wingbacks pushing higher. And after that, Philly was pretty quiet. They had no answer for that. But in the diamond formation, TFC were not nearly as comfortable defensively. So I credit Vanney for making the switch, but I wonder long-term if they want to stick with this diamond, which has provided great results going forward of late. I wonder if they can defend against the most potent teams in the league, like the New Yorks, like the Dallases, if, you know, that would only matter in an MLS Cup final anyways.
But staying true to that point, what team right now, and look, New York City FC are playing great, but 44 goals, 43 against, okay? They don't scare me. What team scares you right now other than TFC? Given on the current climate, their current form right now, what team's scarier?
It's tough to say. I think Dallas...
Because they can score.
But Dallas just lost Fabian Castillo. So, I mean, I still think TFC and maybe the Red Bull are the two scariest teams. Montreal looks a bit wonky, but we'll get to this with Matthew Doyle in the next segment. And I want to do shout out our TFC pitch side poll question, and that is, do you believe TFC still have a chance at the Supporters' Shield? Your options, yes, with the home-heavy finish. No, too far away from Colorado and Dallas. And third option is, don't care, just get top two in the East.
This is the most lopsided poll I've ever seen.
Why?
The poll.
It's not that lopsided.
Sorry. I was distracted. You want me to tell you why I'm distracted? Because I see Pokemon Go on your phone.
Yeah.
You play Pokemon Go?
Yeah.
Oh my God, shame.
I just unlocked it and it opened up.
Where is the shame bell when we need it?
I don't know.
That's awful.
Anyways.
I'm sorry, I had to put you on the spot there. I lost my train of thought.
I gotta see what kind of Pokemon are at BMO Field.
And it was directed at me too. I saw the little ball and everything. What the hell is this?
Okay.
Horrible. Horrible. Honestly, I had to shame you.
It was just open and unlocked.
It was terrible.
Okay.
Just bad.
All right.
Just hang your hand in shame.
No.
You play Pokemon Go? How old are you?
A lot of people.
How old are you?
I grew up on it. Leave me alone. Dan Ariccio, Thomas Michalakos. This is TFC Pitch Side. As of right now, 50% of you say yes. TFC still have a supporters shield chance.
I'm in agreement.
As we get to it right now, it is TFC Pitch Side, and we want to bring you as close to the club as possible. So that's why our next guest is joining us, and that is Tim Bezbachenko, the general manager of Toronto FC. A pretty good run, 5 wins in 6. You must be feeling pretty good right now, Tim.
Yeah, we're not complaining, guys. It's good to be on the show, and you know, over the last couple of years, we've been focusing about sort of trying to build a consistent contender and really trying to build a team that improves throughout the year. And in MLS, it's all about grinding through the summer, picking up points, especially on the road. If you can get a draw, come home with a point, and then start to build momentum as you get into the last, you know, stretch of games, which I think now that we're in the last 10, it's sort of all about picking up the momentum. And for us, we're really trying to get one of those top two spots so that we can get the bye in the first round of the MLS playoffs.
Now, obviously, the big news came last week on your end of things, and that is Armando Cooper coming in on loan with an option to buy, we understand. But really, all of our listeners seem to want to know is how exactly this was able to come through 2 weeks after the deadline.
Yeah, so let me explain a little bit. So loans, as our listeners and our soccer fans know, there's a transfer window that's open for the beginning of the year for about 3 months and then 1 month during the summer. And if you're acquiring a player either via transfer or loan from another club, it has to happen during this window. And what happened with Armando was that all of the documents were uploaded into the system, and what we believed, we effectuated the entire transfer and finished before the deadline. But the computer just wasn't showing that it was complete. And so the deadline kind of came and went. And from our end, everything was done. But then from Panama's end, it sounded like they weren't ever able to get everything done. And so they appealed, and we supported their appeal to FIFA. And then FIFA looked at the facts and said, look, even though it's after the deadline, you, in effect, had all of the documents in and everything was completed, and it was either a technical issue or some other issue that they essentially forgave on the Panama side and said, hey, the player is being transferred to the Canadian Soccer Association, and he's free to play with TFC. So, you know, in the end, it was done before the deadline, but we had to collect all the facts, the evidence, submit it to FIFA, and then they made the ruling, which is why there was a 2-week delay.
We gotta get Panama hooked up with some Rogers high speed internet. You know, it's great.
that is right. That is right.
I'm still a company man, Tim. You know that. But in any case, Armando Cooper.
Guy would appreciate that.
Sure. He certainly would. I hope he's listening. As for Cooper, let's get to it on the field. And what is it exactly that you think he brings to this team that maybe it didn't have before his arrival?
So we are looking at our team, and obviously the summer's a little bit of a tricky puzzle because, you know, when you're bringing in players in the summer, it's typically because you have a real need in your team. You know, last year our defense was a little porous, so we had to pick up and make some moves in the summer, bringing in Josh Williams and Ahmed Kantari. And when you're picking up a player from overseas, you really can't rely on them and guarantee that they're going to assimilate quickly and really help your team. And so what we wanted to do this year is, given that we feel we have a very strong and deep squad, we essentially won the Canadian Championship with our young players, our young homegrown players, and obviously Sebastian, and you know, we had Alex Bono, rookie, you know, our second year goalkeeper in goal. We feel like we have a deep enough squad to do some pretty special things this year. So when we looked at the transfer window, we felt like we were only going to do something if it made sense, and we weren't going to mortgage the future by getting into some sort of long-term contract with a player that maybe we haven't seen live or done the proper due diligence. So we had our list of guys that we were going to act, but then you know, it obviously takes two, sometimes takes three to tango. You know, you got the player who has to agree, and then you have his club that has to agree to the numbers as well. So we had about four or five players that we were looking at if it made sense. And then sort of coming down to the last few days, it seemed to really sort of materialize on Armando, and especially because it's a loan. So what it is essentially a four or five month loan to the end of the year, and then we have an option to buy from Arabe Unido, who's one of the best Panamanian clubs, and then the player would be with us obviously permanently. But you know, in essence, it allows us to evaluate him, and we also feel like he's a guy who can help our team. And so when it comes to on the pitch, Armando is a player who can play multiple, you know, variety of positions. He can play in the center of the park. He can play out wide. He's extremely athletic. He has some pace. He has some bite to his game. In a pinch, he could play in right back. And so we felt like as we come down the wire, and you never know where you might get injuries, and then, you know, Greg's obviously, he likes to give a variety of looks to the opponents. We felt like Armando could really help us. So we're excited to have him. He's a charismatic guy. I think all the fans will like him. Again, it's just how quickly can we get him into the fold. We do feel like he does know North America. He played for Panama in the Copa America, and he has a number of teammates, Panamanian teammates, in the league already. So he knows the league fairly well, and we think his assimilation process can happen quickly.
What's his best position? I know you and Greg have raved about his versatility, but what's his preferred position?
Look, I would say, I mean, in our diamond, I think he could play on the outside right of our diamond. I think that could, and he could also play at the top of the diamond, in depending on the look and the opponent that we are facing. That would be, you know, mine. But obviously, I'm not the coach, and I leave it up to Greg to make those decisions. But you know, again, as you've seen, Greg's used in terms of our diamond, we have a number of strong midfield players, with Will coming back, with Michael Bradley back, and then Markey and Osorio, and then obviously Jay Chapman coming in. Depending who we're playing, we could go a little bit more flatter in the midfield and go a flat 4-4-2, and Armando could sort of play as an eight and as one of the middle guys, or he could play wide right in a 4-4-2. So again, it provides a different look for the team.
TFC GM Tim Bezbachenko joining us on TFC Pitchside. So if all works out, and you mentioned that there is the option to buy with Armando Cooper at the end of this loan, it kind of makes sense to me that this could be a short-term and a long-term thing, that players are going to be out of contract at the end of the season, and there's obviously the expansion draft that could ruffle up the feathers of the roster as well. So it does give the team options going forward. Was this part of the thinking behind it as well?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, once we got into, you know, we were in a pretty solid position in the standings and just really trending well with the mood of the team and the way we are playing, you know, my focus starts to shift toward who can help us toward the end of this year, but also who can help us next year. It's really thinking short-term and long-term. And with this, obviously, it's an expansion year, not just one team, but two teams now, with Atlanta United and Minnesota United being announced this week coming into the league next year. It's a challenge to try to keep the core of your roster together. So you have to have players that you know you're going to keep, and then maybe a few options that if we lose, we will lose one player or two, depending on the expansion rules, which we don't have yet. But you have to have other players ready to fill the holes, either through your academy or through options like Armando or potentially through trades or through the reentry draft that'll take place at the end of the year.
Staying with long term, by 2018, there's going to be 23 MLS franchises. It's 11 teams in over the last decade that are brand new, that come into the league. Do you feel that the MLS is overextending itself and growing too big too fast?
You know, I personally don't, because I do feel like we're just scratching the surface of the type of players that will actually want to come in our league. We have a, you know, I don't know the total number of professional soccer players worldwide, but, you know, suffice it to say that many of them look to MLS as a potential destination. So there's a pool of talent out there that, frankly, we just need to use our resources to get out there, scout more, scout better, get deeper. And then it also behooves our teams to go out and, you know, there's only really a few teams that are really committing a lot of resources in the youth space. And that obviously I include TFC as one of those teams. But there are many ways to build a deep roster, and you don't have to look at your current roster or rely on the MLS Super Draft for just talent like maybe some of the other leagues in North America. So I'm not too concerned about it. I do think some of the resources in terms of the league, the number of people working at the league office, they obviously get stretched thin. You have the league ops, you have in terms of what stadiums teams are playing in. I think those things are more actually of a concern, at least for me personally, speaking for myself, than maybe the player pool.
Now, the player pool with the product is getting bigger. The more exposure is there. Now, we've talked about this all the time, about the media coverage in Toronto and kind of feeling like MLS and TFC are not getting their fair share. Do you think TFC and MLS are getting a raw deal with media coverage? Is the exposure there? Do you want more of it?
Yeah, I think we want more. We want to be relevant. You know, it was difficult. It was the first time we ever made the playoffs, and it was the same night that Bautista does his bat flip. I mean, that's exciting. There's nothing wrong with that, though. You know, I think it'll come with time. I think our fan base is young, millennial-driven. I think our fan experience in our stadium is really there's no comparison in Toronto or, frankly, for any game in North America. I think the MLS experience is unique. I think it's a truly soccer supporter, authentic sort of tribal atmosphere that you get in the supporters section. So would I like more attention? Yes. But I also say is Toronto, we already actually do get a lot of attention compared to other MLS teams. So I think we have we're closer to the end line, than, believe it or not, than a lot of other MLS teams. I think we need to do a better job in terms of broadcasting, getting our numbers up. So, you know, it starts with the product on the field. Obviously, we need to have a winning franchise and something for our fans in Toronto to believe in. But we do have the soccer population in Toronto to, you know, obviously sell out games. I think we're two in the league right now, two or three in the league in terms of average attendance. So people are there. It's just, who's talking about us? And I think that will happen over the next few weeks if we continue to do well.
Yeah, and if Josie keeps playing the way he is, certainly those talks will heighten. I mean, he's been absolutely dominant of late, Tim. And really, I think we all knew that Josie had this potential in him, and that's why I believe there's been interest around the league for a player of his caliber and possibly around the world, even though he's struggled through injury for the last little bit with the club. But had you ever wavered on your end that it just may not work out with Josie at Toronto FC?
No, look, I think injuries is the one sort of variable that it's very hard to predict and obviously eliminate entirely. You know, Josie's goals per 90 are up there with some of the best in the league and league history. We know what he can do when he's healthy. He's a complete animal out there. I mean, he if you saw the goal the other night against Philadelphia, he completely manhandled one of their center backs. They just couldn't keep up with him. And I think that's the player that we all know and love. Obviously, with the U.S. men's national team, that's what Jurgen Klinsmann wants to see, is a guy who's scoring regularly, staying healthy. He's a guy who can hold up the ball. He's a very good passer, and he can score goals on his own. And what it does is really frees up Sebastian to be able to do his thing. And then, you know, it frees up Osorio and Chapman and Bradley to actually pitch in a couple goals. So I do believe that we all know it. If, you know, Josie can be the best forward in the league, he really can, especially in terms of that classic number nine striker. It's just obviously keeping his health.
Do you think you guys are contenders for the Supporter Shield?
You know, we can't really control anything that's going to happen in the West right now. I think, you know, obviously Colorado dropping points at home helps. Dallas transferred their star player and Fabian Castillo, so that obviously helps. But they have it'll be tough catching them. But I think if we take care of things at home and possibly pick up some points, you know, we play in Orlando, and then we only have two more road games the rest of the year. The rest. 6 of 8 at home at BMO Field. So please come down and support us. But I think if we take care of the things at home, I do think we have a shot. But again, it's one game at a time.
Definitely sounds like you're keeping an eye out on that Supporter Shield, knowing what the other teams are doing at all times. That's good for TFC fans to know.
Yeah, it is. No, it makes it more interesting. Obviously, all the games are on each week, MLS Live, or, and you can catch them on television. But it makes it more interesting if you're following all the teams.
It would be big to get the three trophy year, a treble, a tripletta.
Easy now.
Yeah, guys. Yeah, easy.
Talking too soon. Okay. Yeah, I know.
One game at a time. But yes, that's the type of thing fans can get excited about and come down to BMO Field to check this team out. Because it's, you know, one thing I think that Greg has done a really good job of is putting a product out in the field that's playing good football. The way we string together passes is attractive. It's entertaining. You obviously have two of the best strikers in the league. Our defense is locked down pretty much this year. One of the best defenses. We have a young goalkeeper you can see until Clint gets back. So there's a lot to come down and see, and I think Greg's going to done a very good job of bringing along the young guys and putting out something for the fans to get excited about.
Yeah, and it's happening on both ends of the pitch, which really hasn't happened in the history of this franchise all that often. Tim, you've really been gracious with your time. Got one more for you, and we'll let you go. And, you know, there's always talk about transfers, and obviously with the way that Sebastian has played, and even Michael has been the subject of transfer rumors this summer. Are you still getting calls? Because the FIFA window doesn't close until next week.
Yeah. You know, I think the message that we sent out to everyone is that these guys aren't for sale. So, you know, it's kind of quieted down. I think most people, if they're doing their proper work, you know, we would have already heard about the teams because they're willing, you know, obviously they're most of the leagues, if not all of them, have already started. So I don't expect any more offers to come in. But I, again, it's a thing we're always going to battle is you know, getting offers in, or is it something you entertain? Is it not? Where are we at as a club? What are our goals over the next few years? Those are all things that we have to weigh with our ownership, you know, to decide what's the best thing for the club.
Hey, Tim, it's been a good run. Hope it continues, and thanks for doing this today.
Hey, thanks for having me, guys. Anytime.
And there is the GM of your Toronto FC, Tim Bezbachenko, and we thank him again for joining us here on the show. Not for sale. And it sounds like he spilled it a little bit. Haven't yet received any more offers for Michael or Seba. So there have been offers, as we know, as have been reported through the summer and through last year. But TFC just flat out saying no, as they should right now in the midst of a supporters shield race. This isn't a Jermaine Defoe situation where anybody's requested to transfer. And I'm pretty sure at least Michael Bradley definitely wants to stay.
Yeah, but who really has the say in the matter? The league has the say in the matter, not the team.
Let's not get into these semantics right now. We don't have the time for it. Coming up, TFC pitch side, we'll talk to Matthew Doyle, the MLS analyst, as we go around the league and make him eat some crow, possibly. Dan Riccio, Thomas Michalakos, TFC pitch side.
Follow the guys on Twitter at Dan Riccio 590 and at Unfit Ref.
Said I'm fabulously.
Final whistle. It's a big victory for Toronto FC. Their first away victory since April 23rd. The unbeaten streak goes to 6 games. They're back to within a point of first place New York City FC. This is a statement game. You have to say that.
Radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Do not settle. Demand. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand.
Well, fall apart.
Hey, it's Drew Moore, and you're listening to TFC Pitch Side.
And with Toronto FC, there is a canary in the coal mine. They've played really well since June, but Drew Moore's legs look dead to me against Houston.
Bradley has targets. He'll try to put this one in, maybe out the door. Played in, that's out there, it goes by in the header, and there's another one. Drew Moore, 2-1, Toronto.
talk to you.
What are you doing?
How does his legs look now? Hey, how do they look now? Hey,
Matthew Doyle is going to join us in just a second. Would you let me intro the show first?
I had to let that go.
Dan Riccio, Thomas Michalakos. This is TFC Pitchside. Yes, Drew Moore with the goal over the weekend. And that voice, that clip you heard, is the MLS analyst himself on Extra Time Radio talking about Drew Moore. Maybe in a bit of a negative light. Matt... Look, we actually just talked about TFC's defense not looking the greatest, but Drew Moore, he's having quite the goal scoring year. I guess that helps a little bit.
I mean, yeah, any way you can pick up the slack a little bit, clearly what he did this past weekend. So, no complaints there.
But we did hear you on Extra Time Radio. Drew Moore is... he has had moments this year where he's looked great, and I think more than anything, I think his leadership... has provided some stability to TFC's defense, but there have been times when he hasn't looked the most fleet of foot. Do you think TFC's defense could still be an issue, even though on the surface right now it has looked pretty good for the course of the season?
No, I actually don't, and I think the way that they're built, they're going to be really good in the playoffs. You know, about a month ago, as things were sort of shaping up and things were sort of being figured out on the offensive side of the ball, I went out on a limb and I said that I think TFC have a pretty decent shot at winning the Shield. And I mean, there are two caveats there: the health of Jovinko, obviously, and the health of Drew Moore, because they don't really have a replacement for him in terms of organizing the game and in terms of keeping guys like Josh Williams, who's still more athlete than soccer player, or Eric Zavaleta, who doesn't have a ton of experience, or even, you know, the goalkeeper, Alex Bono, keeping them all sort of compacted on the same page. So, I still maintain that, again, if you look at how Moore played against Houston, it wasn't that he is slow. It's that he did look a little bit leggy. He did look like his reactions were a cut or two below what we normally see from him. And I still think that is one of the worries. It's not that Drew Moore is a bad player. Quite the contrary. I think he's in the mix for best 11 and defender of the year. It's that he's, you know, 31, 32 years old, and he's playing over 2,000 minutes now for the first time since, I want to say, 2012. And that can wear you down over the course of the season, especially during a week like this in which they have 3 games in 8 days.
The truth is, Drew Moore asked us to put you on the spot here, Matt. No, just kidding.
But true to form, we've said it about Drew Moore, too. We've seen times that his legs
have
gone. No,
it is true. But we wanted to get your thoughts more on some of the other teams as well here, Matt. And New York City FC, kind of relating to baseball a little bit here, as Toronto's everybody's baseball crazy, but you know,
a lot of
Blue Jays fans think that the Orioles are not for real, and I've kind of felt that way about New York City FC all year, but they just keep winning. The defense is actually shored up at home, at least. Is that good enough for them?
Right now, it looks like it's good enough. And you know, at the start of the season, when they were pretty good on the road and were just dire at home, I thought that they were cooked. What they're doing is kind of unprecedented. You don't see teams struggle like this at home and then go out and get it done on the road. It just doesn't happen. But now they've kept getting results on the road while shoring up their home form as well. Obviously, Lampard coming to the mix has been a huge part of that, but Jack Harrison as well. So now they have what is essentially a front four with Harrison on one side and Tommy McNamara on the other side, and those are both best 11 caliber wingers, and then David Villa and Frank Lampard, both of whom are healthy. That's tough to beat, and you have to beat them. They're not beating themselves anymore. I don't think they're going away, and I think that they will figure pretty prominently come November.
You know, they're first in the league. It's hard for me to praise a team that has 44 goals for, 43 against, most goals for, most against. Very difficult, but it's a question that I have. Could you consider Patrick Vieira, what he's doing right now, as manager of the year? Like, is he in that discussion?
Yeah, he's in the discussion. And to put those numbers in context, I think 11 of those goals against have come against one team. They've come against the Red Sox.
Still not good, though.
No, I mean, it's not. Obviously, it's not good. It is, but if you look at the way NYCFC have handled the rest of the league, that's pretty good. So there are certain teams, and we see this all over the world, that Team A has Team B's number, and that does mostly appear to be the case with the Red Bulls and NYCFC. And credit to Patrick Vieira for that. And I think that what we've seen from Patrick Vieira is two things. First of all, he has a very defined way that he wants this team to play, and they're going out and doing it every week. And the second thing is he didn't come from being a manager at a big club, or really any club in Europe. He came from managing the youth team and the reserves. He came from a position where he was going to have to not just institute a style of play, but take every player on that team and make them individually better. And that is huge in MLS. And I think you see it with Greg Vanney. I think you see it with Oscar Pereja. I think you see it with Jesse Marsh, guys who have spent time managing in academies and reserve setups are the ones who have the best grasp on how to win in this league.
Matthew Doyle, our guest here on TFC Pitchside. Let's get a bit of a 4-1 Derby preview from you because Montreal has kind of been stinky poo-poo of late in the sense that they've allowed 3 goals in each of their last 2 games. They finally were the team that lost to the Chicago Fire on home turf.
That can't be good.
So it's weird because I do like Montreal's team quite a bit, and I think maybe we tend to get a little quick on the trigger when we start worrying about teams that are just in a minor slump. But is there more concerning things going on with Montreal right now?
Yeah, I mean, it's not just a minor slump at this point. The impact of won 4 games in 4 months. That's obviously not good enough. And I think that it's a case of the pieces not quite fitting overall. And it starts with Drogba. He doesn't defend anymore. I mean, he makes almost no effort at it. And so it allows teams to build a little more easily from the back. And once they get into the midfield, they're able to cut through what is a pretty long in the tooth midfield trio. So if you have that, and then they're now trying to work in the new Italian striker, Mancosu, he's a good attacking player, but he doesn't fit alongside Drogba. They tried to play him on the wing, and he was just so narrow the whole time. Chicago were able to get out wide and on the counterattack time and time again. Suddenly, you have 2 real problems in the front 3 defensively, and that just causes this this cascade of problems throughout the rest of the team. And the center, the center backs are just not good enough to deal with that, as great as Simeone is, and I think he is one of the best center backs in the league. He's not going to put out that many fires over the course of 90 minutes. I think they have to refigure out who they are over the next few weeks. They're still going to make the playoffs because the rest of the East is just not much, but they are nowhere near as dangerous as they were this time last season.
Staying true to your statement right there that the East isn't that much, what team scares you the most from TFC's standpoint in the East heading into the playoffs and the West?
Well, I think that the top 4 teams in the East are all really good teams. NYCFC, we already talked about. The Red Bulls, despite their difficulty keeping leads, they're still, I think, probably the best or second best team in the East. And then Philly is really good, too, which says quite a bit about what TFC did this past weekend. That was going on the road to a conference foe and laying it down in their house. That was an impressive win. In the West, look, I don't like the way Colorado play, but it gets them results. They still lead the league in points per game. I think Dallas have maybe the most talent in the league, but they don't have much talent up top, and teams like that can struggle in the playoffs. You need a guy who is just an assassin in front of the net. And they definitely don't have that. And L.A., look, you see them on paper and they should be better, but they're not. And to me, it's simple. They have to bench either Keane or Dos Santos. You can't play both of them at once. All those teams are good. All those teams are beatable. The one who might be the most dangerous right now is Seattle. it ended up being kind of exactly what I thought it was with Seattle. If you looked at the way they were playing earlier this season, They had so much good possession, but they lacked that one guy who could hit the last pass, who could open up the game. And that's exactly what they signed in Nicholas Ladero. And I don't think that the last 4 weeks with him ripping teams up, I don't think that's a coincidence. I think that's who they are now.
We are running out of time. We could talk to you all day, but a quick thought on Vancouver. It's one win in nine for them. Another team on paper that looks like they have a pretty decent squad.
Yeah, but I mean, again, they made the wrong bet, I think, in terms of their forward line. And they were counting on, I guess, maybe a full season of health from Kakuta Mane, which didn't happen. And once he, I mean, I think they have one win in eight since he got injured. So those two things combined with Pedro Morales suddenly getting old and Kendall Waston just looking like a completely different player this year, that's a pretty potent mix for this sort of regression. I do think that the Quakes will bounce back next season because I think Carl Robinson is a really good coach. But right now it feels like they're just kind of playing out the string on 2016.
He is Matthew Doyle. You can follow him on Twitter at MLS Analyst. Wish we could have more time with you here today, Matt, but time is the enemy as usual. You know it.
Clock's always ticking, guys.
Yeah, exactly. Thanks for this, Matt.
Anytime.
There he is, Matt Doyle of MLSsoccer.com, and you can follow him on Twitter at MLS Analyst. Wrote a recent piece on Jozy Altidor that is very, very good. So any of you and your detractors on him, need to check it out because it's quite good. Anyways, that'll do it for us on TFC Pitch Side. Do want to give one last shout out to the TFC Pitch Side poll question. And as it stands right now, 49% of you believe that yes, TFC and their home heavy finish still have a shot at the Supporters Shield.
30 seconds. I want you to tell everyone what you told me about your speculation.
Oh, well,
about expansion.
Okay, so we were talking about expansion, and obviously Atlanta and Minnesota coming in 2017. 2018 is LAFC and Miami, we think. Miami's still, who knows what's going on with that. But, I mean, I think we all kind of expect, and this isn't insider information, but Cristiano Ronaldo is going to be the guy that brings in Miami, and Zlatan Ibrahimovic is going to be the guy that brings in LAFC. This is not difficult to figure out. You just read the tea leaves, and that's what's going to happen. I don't know why you're so surprised by this.
I'm not. I just love hearing your speculation because you have no proof of anything.
We got to get going. Dan Riccio, Thomas Michalakos, tune in. We won't have a match preview for Orlando, but we will for the 401 Derby. Hope to see you at the stadium at BMO on Saturday. Going to be a big one. TFC Pitch Side, Sportsnet, 590, The Fan.
Yeah, well, I mean, retirement is not something that I would do. I mean, my probably greatest hero is Howlin' Wolf, and the stories of him are legendary. At 65, climbing the velvet curtain with the microphone, you know, clutched under his arm and singing from 35 feet above the stage. Yeah, that's me. You know, I don't golf. I mean, what would I retire to? It's what I do. It's what I love. It's what I'll always do.
Sundown in the Paris of the prairie, we kings of all treasures buried, and all you hear are the rusted breezes pushing around the weather vane Jesus. Sipo lighter, he sees the killer's face. Maybe it's someone standing in a killer's place. 20 years for nothing, well that's nothing new. Besides, no one's interested in something you didn't do. We kings and pretty things. Let's just see what the morning brings. There's a dream he dreams where the high school's dead and start.
museum and we're all locked up in it after dark. The walls are lined all yellow, gray, and sinister, hung with pictures of our parents, prime ministers. We kings and pretty things. Wait and see what tomorrow brings. Late breaking story on the CBC. A nation whispers we always knew that he'd go free. They add you can't be fond of living in the past, 'cause if you are, then there's no way that you're gonna last. We're